The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to tell you why paying a coach $2 million per win could have easily been avoided, how one college basketball team hears the phrase, dead man walking, as their season starts to turn sour, and we're going to tell you that you might want to be betting on a particular chess player now, before the markets give him grandmaster status.
A particular chess player. I don't even know where to go with that, Dave. So let's just start with first takes. What did you see last night that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Maybe let's clear something up from what we talked about at the top of the show yesterday. We were making the case that Washington State probably should not have fired Paul Wolf, given that UCLA and Arizona State also had openings. You're number three in the Pac-10 now, or Pac-12. If you had held on to Wolf for one more year, you could have been the only opening next year and kind of be a much more plum job. But now we're hearing there's a reason for that. They think they can get Mike Leach. Mike Leach would be a terrific fit for Pullman. Through the years, look at the number of quarterbacks they've been able to recruit, the number of receivers they've been able to recruit up there, get a lot of guys from the West Coast who can play pitch and catch. That would not only be a good fit on the field for Leach, but I think a good cultural fit. Pullman, Washington, is sort of the Pac-12's version of Lubbock, Texas. He can play cowboy a little bit there, get away with the idiosyncrasies that make him who he is. If that was a driving force, if they thought, well, if we get rid of Wolf, we've got someone waiting in the wings, more power to him. That can actually be a good move in the long run. Teddy, it was a busy, busy Tuesday night. What do you bring with you?
Well, I have two first takes. First, I have to talk about the Super Bowl because we are efforting. We do not have details to report today, but we are efforting to put together a Covers Super Bowl party once again here in Las Vegas. Had a great inaugural party last year, looking to do it again. We will pass along details of this party as soon as they are finalized. So you may want to keep your schedules open. If you want to take a trip to Vegas, hang out with Dave and myself for a couple hours on the Friday night before Super Bowl.
Hang out with who?
Mr. Malinsky. You coming?
See, the we part in the efforting, I was not sure about. Now I just realize we also included me. Yet to be decided.
You have a couple of cocktails. You can be the drunken Boris Schlout. You can come in and be like, I love you guys. Thanks for watching. You know?
Right, but I could be that at other places, too. That just might take priority.
Point is, efforting for a Super Bowl party right now. We will pass along details, but just something to keep in the back of your minds as we're a little bit more than 2 months ahead of the big game. So people starting to think about what they might want to do. Maybe you won't want to think about coming to Vegas and hanging out. But my first take is about one player. In this instance, the one player is Sam Maniscalco, the guy who probably single-handedly covered our spread with Illinois yesterday in their 9-point win over Maryland. And the Illini didn't play a great game, certainly not offensively. But one guy got hot and hit big shots all game long, hit 5 3-pointers, finished with 24 points. Illinois is a team, 18 of 20 from the free throw line. But it was Maniscalco, really, as being the guy when the Illini were playing their awful offense, the shot clock winding down. He was the guy they hit big shots repeatedly throughout the course of the game and in crunch time. And sometimes you'll get that guy in college hoops, whether you're betting on a team or against him. In the NFL, you know, we look, Drew Brees beat us on Monday night, but it wasn't just Drew Brees. It was Drew Brees, his receivers, the Giants' defense, the Giants' pass rush, the cornerbacks, the line. I mean, it's not one guy. At the NFL level. In baseball, sometimes one guy will have a monster game and he'll beat you. But the reality is that more than any other sport, basketball can be affected by one player getting hot or not hot at the appropriate time. And generally, these guys, sometimes they'll beat you. Some will hit 8 out of 9 from 3-point range. You never heard of him before the game. You may never hear of him again, but he just had that one special night where he was able to cover, you know, hit shots and therefore cover numbers. And when that happens again, like with Illinois last night, you just want to take it back a notch, say, all right, what did we see? What's real out of the performance that we saw from whatever player it was that covered that spread? And you certainly want to be aware of those type of players who can cover numbers when the injuries start to mount over the second half of the college basketball campaign. You want to be aware that, hey, this guy that was covering numbers or capable of covering numbers by himself, well, maybe he's not 100%, maybe he's not playing at all right now. Key injuries to be aware of. Let's keep talking about college basketball as we transition into Market Watch for a Wednesday. And the big story in college hoops right now is, of course, the ACC Big Ten Challenge. The ACC won the first 10 meetings of the challenge. Well, the Big Ten won each of the last two, and they're off to a 4-2 start again this year.
We bring this up in Market Watch because there was money to almost everyone from the Big Ten this morning. Now, some of those have faded back a little bit, but there was a time early this morning when almost every Big Ten team was drawing money, some almost of a steam variety. We saw some things that were a little bit surprising yesterday. One, of course, we had talked about having some Duke in our pocket. You could have taken an 8 late in the game against Ohio State. Amazing the class difference in that game. Duke did not play that poorly. That was Ohio State playing that well. That was the best single performance we've seen from any team in college basketball so far this year. Clean, dominating. But maybe the flip side is to look at Illinois-Maryland. We had talked about the Maryland struggles on yesterday's show. As you watch that game unfold, even when you're losing straight up, you just feel it's a matter of time. When you watch how feeble that particular Maryland team is, they're not a great fit for Mark Turgeon's system. There's not a lot of depth there. They don't look like Maryland. And when you look at some of the other bottom tier teams in that conference, one of the great bargains on the board that was created after we went off the air yesterday, you could have taken Northwestern +3 against Georgia Tech. Wire-to-wire win for the Wildcats. Georgia Tech does not look terribly imposing. Right now, we're seeing a little different ACC than we're accustomed to seeing. That, yeah, Carolina is Carolina. We'll talk about them in Money Time tonight. But there's some weaknesses in that conference we're not accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the top of the conference is what it has been, no question. National championship contenders. And that's been the case in the ACC as far back as I can remember. But when it comes to the bottom, the depth in that conference, you're absolutely right, Dave. You talked about Maryland and Georgia Tech being nowhere near where those programs have been at a historical level. What about some of the other teams in the ACC that are way down for where they've been? You know, it's a Wake Forest team. You know, they got Chris Paul. They got Kim Duncan. They were competing for conference championships for Sweet 16 berths at least. Not Wake Forest. I don't know if we want to call them bottom of the barrel just yet, but let's put it this way. They're double-digit dogs at Nebraska tonight. Wake Forest, not where they've been. Boston College has been a team that, you know, had great success in the Al Skinner era. You know, a tough, feisty, hard-nosed team. They weren't particularly sexy. Boy, they covered numbers at a pretty good clip and won games. Now BC looking like a bottom-of-the-barrel team. So the Big Ten has kind of had these bottom-of-the-barrel teams. Indiana's been way down, obviously, from where they were in their heyday. They seem to be rising back up. Northwestern's a team that at times in their history has been a bottom-tier type ball club. They now look to be in position to clinch their first ever, not clinch, in November or December, but to be in position to earn their first ever NCAA tournament berth. So what we're seeing is that the bottom teams in the Big Ten are better than the bottom teams in the ACC, and that's helping to swing the balance in these ACC Big Ten challenges in the Big Ten's favor.
Now, is this something that could be a pattern going forward? Here's what we're going to watch very carefully this year. Boston College and Wake Forest went out and hired excellent tactical coaches. But in the ACC, you've got to bring in talent. Can either of those coaches recruit well enough? And we think Jeff Bezelik at Wake Forest, one of the 20 best tactical coaches in all of college basketball. But can they recruit well enough to get back to that top level in the ACC? You've got to have talent if you're going to compete with the Dukes and the North Carolinas.
Yeah, I mean, what Jeff Bezelik did at Air Force hasn't been done before and hasn't been done since. He put together tactical only a monster program, and I've had a huge couple of seasons with those Falcons. We want your emails to keep on pouring in. We're going to answer your emails later in today's show. sportsday@covers.com. That's the address to send them in. Again, sportsday@covers.com. Follow us on Twitter at Vegas Sports Day. And, of course, get involved in the Covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now. Become a part. Covers.com. Click on the forums. Coming up next, if Postmortem was around 2 years ago, would Turner Gill have actually gotten the job at Kansas? Stay tuned and find out.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name of my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Surgical gowns? I want a surgical mask. I'm not wearing any gowns on air, I'll tell you that much. You guys already made me go on air with a lousy mustache for a couple of days.
You don't want blood to splatter.
I do not want blood to splatter. That is true. There's blood splattering all over Turner Gill right now. The entire Turner Gill era lasted a grand total of 2 years with the Kansas Jayhawks. Now, this is a guy that signed a five-year, $10 million deal to be the Jayhawks head coach. And obviously, lasting only 2 years of that deal, Kansas decided to cut bait and maybe cut their losses. We'll have to see how the program rebounds or responds to the absence of Turner Gill in the future. But, you know, Mark Mangino left this program. It was a very messy end to the Mangino era, no question. But this program was in good shape. This program was competing for Big 12 North titles at the time throughout the Mangino era, certainly throughout the last few years of the Mangino era. And Gill was expected to come in and build off of that success. Obviously, that hasn't happened. So now Kansas, they owe him $6 million that has to be paid. Oh, by the way, within 30 days of him getting fired. Nice deal, Turner Gill. I want your agent. But how does a program make that kind of mistake? One that not only led to a 5-19 record over the last 2 years, but all of that money wasted.
Yeah, Turner Gill may end up in time being a good college football coach. We don't know when his next opportunity is going to be, probably as a coordinator somewhere. Financially, though, he's going to be very well off. Where was the mistake made? Because Kansas didn't come into the postmortem. They didn't do their homework. When Gill was hired for that program, he had a 20-30 record at the University of Buffalo. A MAC coach winning 40% of his games in a weak conference gets elevated to a team that had been in a BCS bowl just a few years ago. It's not supposed to happen. What did happen? I'll go back to 2008. And Buffalo stumbled their way into a conference championship and a bowl season. Why do we say stumbled? 2008, they were outgained by 36 yards per game. You don't win conferences that way. But they were plus 19 in turnovers that year. They were number 3 in the nation in turnover margin. They got a lot of fortuitous bounces. So what do we see and hear everywhere? Turner Gill turned the Buffalo program around. Because that's the people who do the shallow research. That's what they see. Oh, Buffalo won. They were traditionally losers. It must have been Turner Gill. No, they got a lot of good bounces of the ball. What did they do the next year, 2009? They fell back to 5-7. So Kansas hired him off of a losing year. They thought the 2008 meant something. It really didn't. You had to do your homework on that season. Look at how many games they won just because the ball bounced the right way. So one of the ways we will measure coaches over time is how was the program before they got there and how was the program after he left? Because if indeed he had turned Buffalo around, you'd see a progression. But the year before he got there, they went 2-10. The year after he left, they went 2-10. Followed that up with a 3-9. The Buffalo program, no better, no worse than when Turner Gill got there, even though he had 5 seasons to make something happen. Kansas didn't do their homework. They paid the price for that. They've got to ante up an awful lot of money right now. The only thing is we hope it doesn't cloud Gill's future going forward. He might be have a chance to be a good coach, but you have to actually do some coaching to get there. Raiders had plenty of reason to celebrate on Sunday. It was a win that got them to 7-4. They're in the hunt now for a division championship. But notice in this picture who we see celebrating. It's the special teams unit. Sebastian Janikowski, Shane Leckler. And that might tell you a little bit about where we're going with this today, because the 7-4 otherwise is a little bit mystifying. The Raiders are 7-4 despite the fact that they've been outscored by 14 points. Their opponents have 28 more first downs than they do, which ordinarily makes you want to think, wait a minute, this team maybe has been a little bit lucky, as Buffalo had been under Gill. Has it been the bounces that got them to 7-4? But that's not the case either. Only -1 in turnover differential, or +1 in turnover differential. That certainly does not explain how those stats get you a winning record. Instead, it's been something special about this team. It's been Janikowski and Leckler all season long, but particularly on Sunday. In that game, we were watching closely because we wanted to see how Caleb Haney was going to evolve as the Bears' starting quarterback. They gained 6 yards per play. The Raiders only gained 5 yards per play. How does a team beat the other by 1 full yard per play over the course of the game and lose? Teddy's going to tell you how.
Yeah, it's real easy. Here's how they did it. And you know me. We talk a lot about offense, talk about a lot about defense. I love focusing on special teams in both college football and the NFL because the betting markets don't have good statistics to measure these units. And the Oakland Raiders, man, special teams were the difference this past Sunday against Chicago. The Raiders didn't get a touchdown in the game until there was less than 4 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. All the points they scored prior to that were 6 Sebastian Janikowski field goals, taking him to 22 of 24 kicking field goals so far this season. Clearly, the Pro Bowl-type numbers. Shane Leckler, 5 punts in the ballgame for 54.6 yards per punt, and that included a complete flip the field, change momentum, 80-yard punt in the second half of that ballgame that was an absolute difference maker from a momentum standpoint on the Oakland sideline. Devin Hester completely held in check because of the long kickoffs and punts from Leckler and Janikowski, 19.5 yards on 2 kickoff returns, 3.5 yards on 2 punt returns. You add it all up, and the Bears started 10 different drives from their own 20-yard line or worse in terms of field position, including twice pinned inside the 5 at the 3 and the 4-yard line by Leckler. You give Caleb Haney a long field, and your special teams and your defense are in great position to win games and cover point spreads. That's exactly what the Raiders were able to do this past weekend.
When we come back, put away the checkers. We're going to go playing chess today in Inside the Numbers. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's answer some of the viewer emails we've been talking about and asking, prompting you to send in at the start of the show. And we're going to start with a letter from East Coast Jack, who says, quote, "My Eagles have been a huge underachiever so far this season, and there are some real issues in terms of mental toughness. But do you think that being on the road this week might actually help them getting away from all the negatives that they have to read through the Philly media?"
It's good that that comes from East Coast, Jack, because one of the things we understand from having been back there, and Teddy spent a big part of his life on the East Coast also, boy, there's a whole different media, you know, back there. When you're going bad, you're going to get slammed pretty hard. If you're in New York and you have so many different metropolitan papers covering you, they're all competing with each other for the best headlines. Philly, not quite as bad as it used to be now that the Daily News and Inquirer are sort of one and the same, but you take a pretty good beating back there from that media. So yeah, I can understand where he's coming from on that. Not having to see that pressure, and maybe a shorter practice week is even better than a longer one. The one thing we'll focus on, and that game will be in Money Time tomorrow, One of the things we've heard people talking about, well, the Eagles are out of playoff contention. They've packed it in for the season. And we see that phrase come up a lot. NFL teams don't pack it in. These guys aren't necessarily playing for the standings. They're playing for their contracts. They know that everything they do is scrutinized. And if they want to make a little more money in the future, they've got to keep playing hard. When we get to the game tomorrow, this might be one of these times where a Philadelphia team just got loose, no pressure on, maybe does play a little bit better.
Yeah, maybe. But on the other hand, if Tavares Jackson, and this is, to my mind, the handicap for tomorrow's game relies heavily on Tavares Jackson. He was clearly nowhere near 100% against Washington this past weekend. And for extended periods of that ballgame, the Seahawks offense did very, very little. They have a banged-up offensive line, a quarterback with a pectoral muscle that's not allowing him to throw properly. And those type of things can help a team like Philadelphia find their way if the Eagles come with the appropriate mental fortitude. But it's not going to hurt them to go out of town, I'll tell you that much. Being in Philly is not likely to help. But at the same time, come on, how many of these guys really read the papers on a daily basis? I would take the under on the number of Eagles that are sitting there reading the criticism that the media has for them, either on the local papers or even on the sports talk networks on local Philadelphia radio. Please keep those emails coming in. Again, that address, sportsday@covers.com. Best emails go on the air on a daily basis. And now, Dave, it's time to go inside the numbers, and your Cracker Jack research staff has come up with quite a doozy for the Wednesday edition.
Let's talk about chess and checkers. When we get into college basketball season, we're going to deal a lot with coaches, guys who put good end games out there. If a game is close in the final 4 minutes, who can make the right adjustments on both ends of the court can often steal a game, and we like those coaches because some of them steal and win ugly. But let's also talk about a different aspect, too, when it comes to your charting. Point spread records sometimes are absolutely meaningless because they don't tell you what you think you want to get from them. And one of the most misleading is when we talk about a coach's performance as an underdog. Guy puts a good record together as a dog, you might want to think, oh, he's good. He makes adjustments. He covers those spreads. And it could be the opposite. It's you're so bad that the markets have to adjust against you. They have to give your teams extra points. And many times when you've got a good record as an underdog, it's because the other team's letting up on you. You look at, in football, use New Mexico as an example. Almost any game they would have covered the last couple of years would have been because the opponent let up, not because they necessarily did anything right. Hence why the emphasis on straight-up records in these categories, and we get to one of our favorites today, Ben Jacobson, a terrific coaching talent at Northern Iowa, who not a lot of people know about yet. After this show, a few more people will know, but we're not going to influence the markets at the point where the value gets taken away. So when we go inside the numbers for Wednesday, let's take a look at how Ben Jacobson has done as an underdog, either on the road or on neutral courts in his career. 31-16 against the spread. That's terrific. That's almost two out of every three. But now, is it that bias element? Is it because there's a lack of respect and he's taking bigger numbers? No, it's because he gets the job done, hence the chess element. 25 outright upsets. In other words, over half the time when he's been an underdog on the road or a neutral court, his team has won the game outright. This is not just the case of the markets offering value. This is the case of a coach who knows what he's doing at the end of a close game.
And speaking of knowing what he's doing, Malinsky and I know what we're doing when it comes to the Insider Six-Pack. That's coming up right next.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Yeah, let's pop the top on today's Insider Six-Pack. We're going to start with the South Florida Bulls. Stan Heath, I've liked this guy since he was a head coach at Kent State back in the day. Made me money with the Golden Flashes. Didn't live up to expectations at Arkansas necessarily. I think long-term he has real potential with this South Florida program. But boy, the Bulls are in a bit of an injury pickle. as we talk about their shorthanded game at VCU tonight. Very difficult non-conference stretch here for South Florida. They play on the road at VCU and then head to Kansas this weekend, playing a very tough game, obviously, in Lawrence. Now, they're without key inside cog Augustus Gilchrist. He's missed the last two games with injured left shoulder. He's doubtful for tonight. Starting point guard, Jawanza Poland, remains sidelined with a back injury. And until he's cleared to play, we're talking about the true freshman, Anthony Collins, at point guard tonight. It's worth noting that Poland, even when he gets healthy, is still going to have to serve a two-game NCAA-mandated suspension before he gets back on the floor. So the true frosh, Anthony Collins, at point guard, getting his first career start against VCU's aggressive presses. We'll see how South Florida responds to that type of defensive pressure tonight.
Tough setting for Tubby Smith tonight in Minnesota in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. They're a short home favorite against Virginia Tech, but one Big Ten team we're not sure that we want to be looking at. Trevor Mbakwe, a guy who had a chance to possibly even be a first-team All-American this year, team's leading scorer, leading rebounder. We're not going to see him again. Tore his ACL against Dayton in the finals of the Old Spice Classic in Orlando on Sunday. Very difficult guy for them to replace. Not only the numbers he puts up, he's a team leader on the court. Ralph Sampson III would have stepped into a bigger role replacing him, but they're not sure how much they can get out of him tonight. He suffered a sprained ankle on Sunday. He hasn't practiced much since they got back to campus. He'll play tonight. They're not sure how effective he's going to be. So one of the options they also thought is, okay, let's go small. Let's go to a three-guard offense. We have a little bit of depth there. That also has been a difficulty for them. Austin Hollins suffered a bruised knee in that game on Sunday. He hasn't practiced since they got back to campus. Minnesota may be just a little disoriented in that game tonight.
Kevin O'Neill really hasn't been able to get many good bounces since he arrived at the Southern Cal job, and it just got worse. The Trojans are already playing without their sharpshooter, Gio Fontan. They're already playing without Curtis Washington. And they're now going to be without 7-footer, 250-pound center, the sophomore, Dwayne Dedmon. For at least a month, he suffered a stress fracture in his right foot. Dedmon's numbers aren't going to jump off the page at you. We're talking about 7.7 points, 6 rebounds. But you have to factor in the fact that USC plays at a dreadfully slow pace, if you like up-tempo basketball. So with fewer possessions, obviously, you put up fewer statistical numbers. And let's not forget that his backup, the 7-footer James Blastic, is a guy who's averaged 1.9 points per game in just about 17 minutes off the bench. He's going to be in the starting lineup tonight. It's worth noting that Dedmon's numbers, again, not going to jump off the page at you, but Kevin O'Neill has highlighted him as a potential future NBA lottery pick. So it's an injury that Southern Cal likely to feel, both in terms of their defensive pressure and in terms of their interior defense, I should say, and in terms of their rebounding and putback acumen when it comes to getting easy buckets off the offensive glass.
Some changes being made in Indianapolis that might elicit a lot of yawns for many of you, but there are things that could have some significance. There is going to be a quarterback change. Dan Orlovsky will get the start ahead of Curtis Painter this week. The way we're reading this is we're believing more and more that the Colts will be looking at Andrew Luck or Matt Barkley come draft time next year. That means either Orlovsky or Painter is most likely not going to make the roster. Figure this is their chance to look at Orlovsky and decide which of those two they want to get rid of. The one guy they did get rid of yesterday, defensive coordinator Larry Coyer. Just dreadful, dreadful numbers for this unit. Dead last in the league in points allowed, 29th out of 32 teams in yards allowed, and dead last, number 32, opponents' third down conversions. Mike Murphy, been a linebacker coach long term, steps up to the defensive coordinator's position. There's a chance Murphy might be able to carry that job full time. Look for the Colt defense to actually play hard for him, maybe even harder than they did under Coyer.
Yeah, and Indy's defensive numbers are actually worse than that. They went through a 5-game stretch without creating a single turnover. So we talk about all the dead last categories. That's one that didn't even make the insider six-pack. But obviously, Colts' defensive concerns still remain paramount as they're 20/20.5-point dogs at New England this weekend. Yesterday I got to go off on a long snapper. That was kind of fun. Well, I'm probably not going to get to do it again for a while. The guy we ripped, the guy who was going through a slump, 9-year veteran, Ryan Pontbriand, well, he got cut. Surprise, surprise. You know, he's never going to kind of get out of a slump. The Browns waived him. He was replaced by undrafted rookie free agent Christian Young, who had been released by Tampa Bay earlier. Now, remember, Pompeian was in his ninth year with Cleveland. The only guy who'd been on the roster longer when the guy he was the guy he was snapping to, the kicker, Phil Dawson. So obviously someone who'd been in the locker room, been around a while, he's taking the boot right here and taking the blame for a couple of Cleveland's recent defeats. But that's not the only news coming out of Cleveland today. Big injury. Linebacker Scott Fujita and, of course, the defensive end Emmanuel Stevens, both their seasons are ended, getting placed on IR yesterday. The Fujita injury is really an impactful one. It's a second straight season that he's had to go on IR, and we'll let his compatriot, DeQuell Jackson, sum up what Fujita means to the team. Quote, "It's huge. I mean, he's a veteran who controls his side of the defense. We won't see him in uniform again in 2011.
Part one of the quarterback derby in Houston is over. Last week on the show, we mentioned five free agents they had brought in for tryouts. Kellen Clemens got signed off of that list, but they don't really have major plans for him. Earlier this week, we mentioned that if Sage Rosenfels passed his physical in Miami, was given a clean bill of health, they might have picked him up to step in. That didn't happen. So it became a one-on-one yesterday between Jeff Garcia and Jake Delhomme. Winner take all, not just to get a job, but maybe to be quarterbacking a team in the playoffs. Jake Delhomme wins it over Garcia. Now it gets real interesting. We say that was part one. Now here comes part two. Not only are you going to make the playoffs if you're Houston, you're still alive for a home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Patriots have weaknesses. So do the Steelers. So do the Ravens. And certainly whoever wins the AFC West is beatable. So you can envision yourself as, you know what, it's not just getting to the playoffs. Let's try to win the damn thing. Now it becomes Delhomme or Yates. Who is going to be the starter? We expect still Yates for this particular week because Delhomme will need a little time in the system. But from Gary Kubiak commenting on the signing yesterday, he's played in big games. He's got West Coast offense verbiage in his background. He was so upbeat about coming here. He showed good arm strength. He's just a very impressive guy. Remember, Jake Delhomme, once upon a time, was a quarterback in a Super Bowl. Don't be surprised if maybe as early as next week, he's the Houston starter.
Yeah, Jake Delhomme was also a quarterback who has a double-digit favorite through five interceptions and single-handedly allowed the Arizona Cardinals to get to the Super Bowl. So he's like the Mark Sanchez of the modern era, someone who has incredible highs and incredible lows. I would have sworn I just heard you use the word damn on air, Dave. Did that just happen?
Yeah.
My virgin ears. That's like the you haven't said that's the closest you've come to swearing on air since we've done the show. And I give you credit for that.
Got a real issue with virgin ears. there might be some habits that are just a little bit disconcerting, let's say.
When we come back, I'm going to put my virgin ears to the test, and we're going to look at this damn information and put it to work for you. It's money time.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start in Raleigh, North Carolina, where the Indiana Hoosiers are road favorites tonight, minus one on the road against the Wolfpack. We've seen good two-way action on this game. Indiana took a bunch of early money. Now we've seen a little bit of NC State money buying back on the other side. But it's clearly the type of game where the straight-up winner is supposed to cover the point spread.
We got involved a little bit with NC State this morning when that line peaked at Indiana minus two. And we understand where the Indiana money's coming from. This team is playing good basketball. Tom Crean not only put a full roster together for the first time, but he's got a roster that fits the way he wants to play basketball. And, boy, it really helps to have a guy like Cody Zeller inside. Playing at sophomore junior status already, even though he's only a half a dozen games into his college career. So, yes, Indiana's doing a lot of things right. But to be a road favorite this early, We have to question that. This is the first time they've left the state of Indiana. When you look at your charts, you'll see that they covered as a road favorite at Evansville. Don't treat that as a road game. That was really more of a neutral, and according to some people at the game, possibly even more Indiana fans than Evansville fans. Evansville plays in a big arena. Indiana's got alums all throughout the state. So it is a good team. It is a team that is getting a lot better. They move the ball well on offense. But we're not sure yet if they're ready to D up on the road against a quality opponent.
And the lack of quality foes is certainly an issue that you always have to deal with in the college basketball handicap, in any college basketball handicap, particularly early season. Just because a team's feasted on weaklings doesn't mean they're not capable of stepping up in class against quality foes. It just means we don't know yet. And Indiana certainly falls into that category. We don't know if the Hoosiers are going to be good enough to step up in class on the road at NC State because we haven't seen that opportunity. They haven't had that opportunity to do so yet. But it's worth noting there are some really positive signs coming from this Wolfpack team right now. Scott Wood, and now back in the lineup for NC State. He's 15 of 26 from beyond the arc so far this season. One of the nation's best sharpshooters from three-point lane, from three-point range. C.J. Leslie is great off the bench. He's averaging more than 16.5 points per game, 63% shooting. He's averaging starters minutes, but he's coming off the pine, which gives him some very good matchups. And as a team, the Wolfpack so far this season, 106 assists versus 75 turnovers. That's the type of ratio we like to look for out of home underdogs in any sport, any time of the year.
Let's go to East Lansing, Michigan, where Michigan State drawing a lot of money so far, now up to 7.5 over Florida State. And first, a little bit of a warning. Yeah, this one's on ESPN. You'll get to watch it. If you have a young son that you want to grow up to be a basketball player, and he's going to top out at maybe 6'2 or 6'3, and he's going to have to play based on shooting and ball handling, don't let him watch this one. Yeah, this will be very competitive basketball, but it's going to be about as ugly from a basketball purist standpoint as you're going to see. If we have to pick one game all season to be a defensive slugfest, brick shots, block shots, loose balls off of offensive rebounds, they'd have guys diving on the floor after. That's what Tom Izzo's teams do. It's what Leonard Hamilton's teams do. And boy, up front, these are NBA-size front courts, possibly even with a lineup change for tonight. Florida State is so big across that we might see Tom Izzo do something that he hasn't done yet this year. Adrian Payne and Derek Nix, ordinarily both pivot players, might be on the court together at the same time. Teddy, is this going to be basketball or wrestling?
Probably a little bit of both. But again, when we're talking about a game like this, you have to be aware of how, you have to try to make a prediction on how it's going to be officiated. If they're whistling all game long, both teams are going to get to the free throw line 35 times because that is that style of basketball. If they're allowing them to play defense, and as you mentioned, Dave, both Izzo and Hamilton coach teams tend to play a heck of a lot of defense, then we're talking about a game where if these two teams could struggle to reach 50. You talk about the size. I mean, Xavier Gibson, 6'11", Bernard James, 6'10", Okara White, 6'8". That's the front court for Florida State. Both guards, 6'5", or taller. Tom Izzo can counter with Adrian Payne. He's 6'10". Derek Nix is 6'9". Those two guys can play together on the floor. But the shooting percentages here are equally a concern and certainly worth noting. You look at what happened to Michigan State. The two step-up games against quality defensive foes, North Carolina and Duke, and you can make arguments that maybe those two teams aren't quality defensive foes, but in those two games, the Spartans shoot under 37% from the floor. Meanwhile, Florida State, three games in the Bahamas against Massachusetts, Harvard, UConn, their step-up games per se so far, just 38% shooting in those contests, so no surprise, these two teams 8-2 to the under so far this season.
Now, when Teddy mentions the Bahamas, take note of that, that a lot of times we don't like teams who don't have a buffer game coming back from one of those trips. Michigan State, went on and played North Carolina. They've had some soft games since then. Florida State had no buffer off of that Bahamas trip. They might not have their legs fully back underneath them for this one. That could show in the latter stages. The difficulty is that 7.5 is high. And, of course, the problem for Michigan State is even if there are a lot of whistles and they're getting to the free throw line, they can't make their free throws. That's getting to be a bit of a high impost for Michigan State. Are we going to get bagged at +8 like we did with Duke last night? Probably not. for as punchless as Michigan State's offense is, I don't want Florida State having to score from behind on the road. They've just got nowhere to go to find those points.
Yeah, and one of the things we talked about in Money Time yesterday with the Arizona-New Mexico State game, a team in a very tough travel spot returning home, Aggies played great last night. They really wore down the stretch and allowed Arizona to pull away, win the game, and cover the point spread as a result. Let's go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where the North Carolina Tar Heels right now about a 7.5-point favorite against Wisconsin, down to 7 in some locations. This line's bounced around all morning today. And this is a team they couldn't contrast more, possibly. North Carolina wants to run and gun, and Wisconsin wants to slow it down and do everything in half-court sets. Real contrasting styles here. This is one game where side and total perhaps are related, Dave?
The game of the night to watch. And if you are a basketball purist, when we talk about the contrast, it's not just the fact that they contrast, because you see a few games like that every day. These are contrasts among the very best out there at what they do. North Carolina runs the floor better than anyone. Watch the way in the early stages when they do get fast break chances. May not be a lot of them tonight, but watch the way they fill the lanes. They do it with sophistication. You're not just running, you're running smart. But does anyone slow a game down better than Wisconsin? You're going to see that swing offense of Bo Ryan, a purist's delight in that you move the ball back and forth and back and forth, and all of a sudden, the defense doesn't catch up with one of the passes. Bingo, there's your open shot. It's going to be fascinating to watch. So how does it break down? Well, you want to say whoever gets the pace has the edge, but we don't know who gets the pace. It's tough to speed up a Bo Ryan team. But if a Bo Ryan team has to play from behind in this setting, they're not good at scoring quick to get back in the game. Where it could be decided, though, is the toughness inside. And it's the question we've talked about with this Carolina team from day one. They're athletic. They will block shots inside because they're long, but not because they're tough. So the one concern if you're Roy Williams, the early game against Michigan State, get out-rebounded 42-31. They were out here in Las Vegas this weekend against South Carolina and UNLV. Two teams that are not that imposing around the basket. Carolina gets out-rebounded 84-70. If they lose the battle of the boards to Wisconsin, maybe that tells us who's going to get the tempo.
You say nobody runs the floor better than UNC. What about UNLV? I'd have sworn our hometown running Rebels ran the floor pretty well against them last Friday with the 10-point victory. But maybe that's the type of win that works for North Carolina in this setting. It takes the pressure off the Tar Heels, takes the pressure off Roy Williams. They don't have to start worrying about undefeated seasons anymore. And if you're going to lose in college hoops, lose all you want in November and December. Obviously, the losses matter more the later in the season that you get. But we also have to ask, how ready is Wisconsin for this ballgame? We talked about Indiana not having any real tough tests so far this season. Well, the Badgers, they played Bradley and BYU in Chicago. That was all mostly in front of Wisconsin fans who travel very, very well in basketball as well as in football. We haven't seen a real step-up game from this Wisconsin team yet. North Carolina has stepped up more than once.
So we've gone through three of the biggest challenge games. Got some little things for our pocket, you know, maybe a little bit of NC State at a plus price. Maybe look at the total in the Michigan State game later. Game could easily play under. But the best on tonight's board, you're going to have to rewind back to earlier in the show. Teddy, take this one home for us.
Yeah, it's time for the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And we are going to use Northern Iowa, +5.5. We referenced Ben Jacobson's remarkable record with the Panthers, 25 outright upset wins as a road or neutral site underdog in less than 50 chances. He's doing it more than half the time. I think he has a chance to do it tonight. Let's take Northern Iowa, the Panthers, +5.5 as the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back again tomorrow.